Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Lafayette Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Lane Born Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Daylight saving time has ended, and it's dark out now.
Yes, wow. It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
I saw
a different deal now.
Oh yeah, really? I mean, I saw something on the internet. Girl looking out the window and saying, "Oh my God, it is so dark. What time is it? 12:30?" And the guy says, "No, 6." You know, it's dark so fast.
Yeah.
But yep. Yeah. Oh well. A couple of years ago, I heard that Florida, a legislature proposed to put Florida on daylight saving time year-round. We are the sunshine state, he said, and because we are the sunshine state, we should be on daylight saving time year-round so that we would have sunshine in the evening. And that was it. Never heard anything else. I thought it was a good idea. I wouldn't mind being on it year-round, actually, but, you know, because early in the morning...
Yeah.
So.
I never thought about that.
But I don't know. I know what I was going to say. I listened to that opening there. People come into the winery from different states all the time. I always fascinates me how many different travelers we have down here to Florida. And well, it probably doesn't fascinate you since you've seen them at Disney World all the time. But here, coming into the winery, I get people from all over the place. And it's funny because they'll say, "I'm from Maine and there's some wineries down here." And I go, "Oh, yeah." And I start talking about it. And they go, "Oh, you've been there?" I said, "No, I did a radio program." Or somebody will come in from another state or something like that. And it's like I've been to all these places because I've talked to all of these different wineries in these places. And it's really fun to be able to talk to people about the wineries in their state. And so I was thinking about that during that opening there. It's all sorts of different
especially
people.
When you hear all the other voices and everything coming in there, and it's, you know, announcing the wineries, are like, "Oh yeah, we talked to them. It'd be better to talk in person." But, you know, it's, this is good also. But yeah, it's like being there.
It is. It really is. It's fun. And it's fun to talk to people about. They say, "Oh, I've been to this winery," and I said, I interviewed them. They were on my radio program, and so, which is always fun. I'm going to talk about something for a little bit here. This is out of a magazine called Winemakers Quarterly, and it's put out by a lab, ETS Labs, and it's a little bit more technical. Like I say, our premise of the program is to make wine less intimidating and more friendly, but a little bit more technical here, but not really. They're talking about a few things here that I want to talk about just for a few minutes. This is sugar content in grapes. We've talked about sugar content in different shows and different things and all. And winemakers measure sugar contents in Brix or degrees Brix, B-R-I-X. And this is just telling a little bit more about what it is and what it does. And you may find it interesting. You may find it, not interesting. You may find it over your head. But it gives you a little bit of an insight to the sugars of wine and the grapes. It says, because the must components are in a state of flux during the alcoholic fermentation all the way to the post-malolactic fermentation, the winemakers like to make adjustments rather than go through one initial and massive adjustment. They're constantly adjusting it and targeting a certain total acid and pH and our ethanol levels. And they refer to pH as ethanol level in this, which is another way to look at it. But if you tell people ethanol, they immediately think of distilled corn. So, these fermentation numbers and everything they do about the midpoint of the fermentation, and uses make an ongoing and final fermentation adjustments, which is easier to get the outcome they want in the wine. It says that they're asked why they see a big difference in the concentration of acids, sugars, or alcohol in their free-run juice at the beginning or at the middle of the fermentation and then again at the end. And it says it could be due to sampling processing. But the free-run juices obtained by crushing grape clusters may not reflect the actual content of some juice components, such as the acids and potassium, which can lead to high levels of grape tissue next to the skin, which could give you false readings. So as the grape tissues break down during the initial fermentation stages, the extraction of acids and potassium will contribute to the differences of your sugar in midway and at the end. Sugar in raisins or shriveled grapes may not release initially, providing an underestimate of the total sugars and potential alcohol. So when you start using botrytis grapes, and that's when grapes are affected by the botrytis scenario, which, again, we've talked in the past about that, but that's German ice wines are made out of that. And the Trockenbeeren Auslaces and Auslaces and stuff in Germany, the botrytis gets into the grape, sucks the moisture out, and leaves the sugar. So when you ferment these, you're not getting a good reading at the beginning until actually it comes up at the end. So different levels of acid, potassium, and sugar and potential alcohol vary with the samples within the same vineyard or within the same batch. And all these can contribute to a difference in the free-run juice at the end. Now, Brix. Brix is a measure. Now, and I tell people, loosely translated, Brix means, a degrees Brix means percentage sugar. But not really. But, it's close enough for government work. But Bricks is a degrees bricks is a measure of soluble solids in juice and must. The soluble solids in grape juice are primarily sugars. Okay, so you're measuring the soluble solids of the primary sugars. Organic acids, however, have a significant impact on bricks with unripe grapes. So when you test a grape for sugars, then if it's unripe, it's going to give you a different reading. Sugar concentration increases rapidly in grapes as they mature. So this increase is usually due to sugar movement from the leaves to the fruit. So you can test a grape and then, you know, a few days later test again and all of a sudden it has a lot more sugars. During the final stages of berry development, berry dehydration may also contribute significantly to the final sugar concentration. So as the sugars go into the grape, it also can cause some dehydration of the grape, which will concentrate sugars more. The sum of glucose plus fructose measures the two main sugars present in juice that can be fermented by yeast. So it's glucose and fructose are actually being fermented. This analysis provides a sound basis for the estimated potential of ethanol in the wine. This also is an important supplement to degrees bricks testing when final ethanol predictions are critical. All right. Now, degrees bricks is used as an estimate of sugar concentration and often as a predictor of potential alcohol. Degrees bricks is not a true measure of fermentable sugars. Two juices with identical degrees bricks may have very different final alcohol concentrations due to varying amounts of fermentable sugars. Okay, again, glucose and fructose are the fermentable sugars, so it may vary. Just the degrees bricks alone will not give you a true, it could vary. It's important to note that in ripe fruit, glucose and fructose numbers often appear higher than the corresponding degrees bricks results. This is because degrees bricks is measured as a percentage by weight, meaning bricks values are greatly influenced by the density of the juice. Glucose and fructose is measured as weight by volume and is independent of juice density. So a must with 23.3 degrees bricks will not have 23.3% by volume fermental sugar. It will vary. So I know it sounds a little bit complex, but you know, if you listen to the show on archives, go back through and listen to that again. It starts falling in and explaining what sugars do, the glucose and fructose sugars, and degrees of bricks, how it actually influences it and all that. And then they go on and explain tartaric acid, pH, how it's measured, malic acid accumulates, potassium, and tartratable acidity, RTA. But the glucose, fructose, and bricks is, people understand bricks, I think. They know what bricks is because whenever you talk to a winery, you say what's your sugar level, and all the wineries will usually respond by saying, "Oh, it's 3.6 degrees bricks or something like that," and they'll talk to you that way. And I think people will hear that. So, but again, it's glucose and fructose is your sugars that you get. And then, you know, some other stuff. I won't go into the technical stuff in here because it's technical. But not that you won't have the intelligence to understand it. It's just that it can become boring unless you're really interested in it, which I am, and I think it's fun. But We've got some other stuff to talk to you about today. Brexit. The British... Well, let's see, where's my mouse? Oh, there it is. The British exiting the European Union. What is going to happen with the prices of wine? Well, one of the things that's going to happen is they're saying it's going to rise. It's not going to do anything but just cause the British to spend more money on wine and everything else. The former Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, C-L-E-G-G, Nick Clegg, reported to the Mirror, which is a newspaper in the United Kingdom, that prices will go up. This is wine lovers who are going to be affected could see a rise of 14% as soon as they leave the EU. 14% across the board, everything. He said that that's going to be mild considering other price increases. Beef, he said, could rise by as much as 59%. Cheese by 40%. Chocolate by 38%. He said, and this is not something that he is trying to scare you. He said, this is what's going to happen in Britain when they actually end the, well, the 2 years. They got 2 years, and the tariffs will automatically be imposed after leaving the trading bloc. So he said by 2019, the impact could be strong on the retailers and customers throughout the United Kingdom. So we keep saying about what's going to happen. He's predicting gloom and doom on that. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what does take care of it. We've always hearing about red wines and how they create and how good they are for all sorts of different things and all that. This is something that the different area said a glass of red wine a day could help women get pregnant. And not because you're drunk and can't control yourself. This is a glass of red wine a day could help prevent women developing a common condition that can stop them from having children. New research has found. The study said that the natural compound of resveratrol, which we've talked about many, many times, helps address the hormone imbalance in women with PCOS, and that is polycystic ovary syndrome. And they said that's the leading cause of female infertility. The more than 3.5 million British women are estimated to have PCOS. And they said they found that those who produce higher amounts of testosterone and androgen than average causes that. But the elevated levels contribute to irregular or absent menstrual periods and weight gain. They said that having the resveratrol from red wines can help combat that, can help balance it out. In a three-month study, it's an anti-inflammatory properties in it, and that could help. A three-month study found that 30 women with PCOS completed a randomized trial, and they were given resveratrol or a supplement, or a placebo, resveratrol supplement or placebo. They took the pills. Women who took the resveratrol supplement saw testosterone levels fall by 23.1%, and the placebo group level increased by 2.9%. And they said that it could help the ones who, the participants who took the resveratrol also saw a reduction in the risk of diabetes by 31.8%. Wow, that's a lot. The insulin levels were dropping by 31.8%. So findings suggest resveratrol can improve the body's ability to use insulin and potentially lower the risk of developing diabetes and help women with PCOLS. So interesting study and something for anyone out there who might have troubles getting pregnant. Maybe a glass of red wine a day could help that. So, hey, who knows? We'll just report in here. Pierce disease. We've talked about Pierce disease many times. Florida has it really bad. It's in warm climates. It's something that is a constant problem that we're always on the outlook for throughout Florida, throughout the southern states, Texas, on into California. Well, responding to concerns from wine growers of the North Coast, the Pierce Disease Glassy Wing Sharpshooter Board commissioned University of California researchers and farm advisors to investigate increases of Pierce disease in the North Coast. Now, the North Coast, north of San Francisco, Sonoma, Napa, that is the north, but the coast is Sonoma. During the 2016 season, it was determined, the goal was to determine what factors are driving the new Pierce disease outbreak. They're trying to find out what's causing the problem. They plan on looking at several factors which may be playing a part for the outbreak. Possibly changes to the pathogen, warmer climates, drought. They're not sure. Numbers coming out of areas of Southern California where the glass wing sharpshooter is widely established show a resurgence in recent years. A resurgence in sharpshooter numbers in recent years. Not good. It is all over Southern California now. They're panicking. They're worried, and it is becoming a problem, especially with the drought. The drought is not causing, or is, they think that might be a major cause, the warm weather and the drought. Researchers are looking at insecticide resistance and other possible factors in the higher numbers of the glass wing sharpshooter. Again, ongoing problem. Glass wing sharpshooter, 15 years of success in trying to control it and take care of it, and it is now starting to rear its ugly head up there in Northern California. So, okay, let me do this. I want to just save that one, but I need to go to this one. And here we are. Okay, shipping laws, new shipping laws. You know, I need to email the president again. I emailed him a year ago and asked him if maybe while he was doing executive orders, he might be able to do an executive order to allow shipping to all states because of, you know, fair trade within states and all that. And I never got an email back. I'm not even from one of his assistants or whoever happens to handle the emails. Nobody responded to me. Well, maybe since he's got time now for the next 2.5 months, he might be able to email me and or be able to put an executive order and get us shipping everywhere. But shipping laws expands to Missouri and Michigan. The Missouri courthouse and Michigan State House retailers are battling the right to ship wine to consumers across state lines. Lawyers who filed suit last month in Illinois federal court challenging a ban on wine sales of out-of-state retailers have launched the same in Missouri. And in Michigan, legislatures are considering a bill that would allow in-state shipping by retailers but ban sales by out-of-state stores, which is counterproductive. That's, you know, free trade across. Supporters of allowing wine consumers to have access to more wines by legalizing retailer sales across state lines hopes the fights will eventually end up in the Supreme Court. Go back. I don't know I'm going to say a couple of years. A couple of years ago, we talked to a legislator from Florida who was he had served on the legislature for a couple of years, and he was a guest on the program, and we talked about the laws and the shipping and stuff like that. Interesting program. He suggested that you know, a bunch of wineries get together and say, hey, this is stopping fair trade by not allowing us to ship. And he explained that all that. You can go back and listen to that program. It is on archives. But this is another shot in the whole thing. Missouri bans retailer-to-consumer direct shipping, but it does allow reciprocal shipping. Now, a lot of states do that. Merchants in states that permit Missouri stores to sell to their residents can sell to Missourians. Florida does not allow out-of-state sales, and in the latest lawsuit, Sarasota Wine Market LLC versus Nixon filed September 23rd, the owner of a Sarasota store called Magnum Wine and Tastings is challenging that restriction. Magnum Wine and Tastings has customers from all over the country, including many in Missouri, he said, and he visited them while he was there on vacation. Magnum Wine and Tasting obtains and sells many wines that cannot be obtained in retail stores in Missouri, including older vintage, limited production, private label, and wines that have sold out in Missouri. So he wants the right to be able to ship to them. He said the suit also knows that Magnum, owned by Heath Cortez, has favorable access to wines auctioned at estate sales because of Florida's high population of retirees. They said the biggest beneficiary would be Missouri residents who are not situated right around Kansas City and St. Louis, where there are some decent wine shops. A lot of rural area, as is, you know, most country, but particularly in the Midwest, a lot of rural areas there that would benefit from this law. St. Louis resident Michael Schlichter, a wine consumer, is also a plaintiff in the case. The Missouri governor, attorney general, and supervisor of alcohol and tobacco control in Missouri are the plaintiffs that they've named, the defendants. Defendants. Plaintiffs are the ones who put it. The Illinois complaint, the following in Sarasota, makes a two-pronged attack about the constitutionality of Missouri's shipping code. It says it violates the Dormant Commerce Clause. Now, that's what we're talking about. That's why I'm, you know, contact the president and say you're violating the Commerce Clause here by treating interstate sales, shipment, and delivery of wine by retailers less favorably than interstate sales. And that violates the Privileges and Immunities Clause by denying Cortes the privilege to engage in his occupation in a state upon the same terms as Missouri citizens. I don't know if you follow that or not. If you can sell to people in your own state and someone from out of state cannot do it, that is a violation of the Commerce Clause, because you should be able to sell out of state. The legislature that was on, used an example. Many years ago, he said in the 40s, 40s or 50s, a legislator was driving on one of the roads in Florida. He was behind a rock truck. The rock truck kicked off a rock, kicked it up out of the street and into his windshield and shattered his windshield. The legislature went back and pushed through an amendment that says rock truck flaps have to be 18 inches long as opposed to the standard 12 inches. Now, I don't know the measurements on that. I just threw that out as a number. But it created a major problem whenever trucks tried to drive into Florida, because the standard across the country was 12 inches. And when they got into Florida, it had to be 18 inches. And so they would either have to change their flaps on their trucks, the mud flaps, or drive into it and get a ticket, because tickets were being written. Well, trucking companies got together and sued for the fact that they were violating the Commerce Clause. It was stopping companies from doing business in Florida because they were not meeting that standard on the mudflaps. And the Florida law was found to be illegal because it did violate the Commerce Clause. So this is basically the same thing that they're doing here. The Granholm versus Hill Supreme Court decision a number of years ago said that discriminatory bans on direct shipping by wineries. So it is an ongoing thing here. On September 20th, state representative from Michigan introduced Senate Bill 1088. And so according to analysis by Michigan Senate Fiscal Agency, the bill would amend the Michigan Liquor Control Code to allow retailers with a specifically designated merchant license to use a common carrier, such as FedEx or UPS, to sell and deliver wine to a consumer in the state. But the bill deletes references to out-of-state retailers with similar license. So it's something else that they are continuing to get arguing about. So if the bill is passed and becomes law, it's very, very likely to be challenged. And they need to challenge. If a third lawsuit was filed, and it would make it even more likely it would go to the Supreme Court. So we need to get Bill, I think his name is, FreeTheGrapes.org. Yeah. The president of FreeTheGrapes.org. I need to get a hold of him and get him back on the show again, have him start giving us some more comments about these things that are going on here, because it looks like people are ready to have this stuff shipped everywhere. It looks like people are talking about, you know, here's three more states here, Michigan, Missouri, and Illinois, who are doing stuff and they want things to be done. And there's also other states. I mean, I, again, refer to the people that come into the winery all the time. And they say, oh, I'd like to have it shipped here, but I can't. I'd like to do this. I really would. I moved from X state, and I love this wine, but they can't ship it to Florida because they can't ship it to me, and all sorts of stuff like that. So ongoing. It's something that we really – let me make a note. Contact Bill – FreeTheGrapes.org. And if you're not familiar with the site, FreeTheGrapes.org, check it out. It's about shipping laws all over the country. It's about what's being done, what can't be done. You can check what states you can ship to and can't ship to and what you can receive from and all sorts of stuff. So we've had him on the show a couple times and very interesting interview with him. So states with us, we will try to keep you informed. We'll try to get a hold of Bill and find out if we can't find something from him about what's going on with shipping laws and all that. Excuse me. I don't have a wine tonight. I just realized I don't have a wine tonight. And I've got some of my port. I really should have poured some of that. Scientist has sequenced genome of number one red grape. Now that, of course, leaves everybody going, what is the number one red grape? The Vitis vinifera. Let's see. Number one red grape is the Cabernet Sauvignon, if you haven't guessed already. The scientists have produced a high-quality draft genome sequence of Cabernet Sauvignon. This results of new sequencing technology combined with new computer algorithms that can yield detailed information about complex genomes and different things. This is scientists. A success of this assembly, which allows researchers to assemble large segments of an organism's DNA. The finding was published in the journal Nature Methods. Grapevine Genomics Technology solves a problem that has limited the development of genomic research for grapevine varieties. It's like finally being able to uncork a wine bottle that we have wanted to drink for a long time, says the researcher, lead researcher Dario Cantu. The first genome sequence of the common grapevine, Vitis vinifera, was completed in 2007 because it was based on a grapevine variety that was generated to simplify the genome assembly procedure rather than a cultivated variety. So the sequence lacks many of the genomic details that economically important wine grape varieties possess, he said. So it was just done, just to say we have sequenced the genome for Vitis vinifera. The sequencing of the Cabernet Sauvignon and other historically important grapes are going to be done now. This will help understand what makes Cabernet Sauvignon Cabernet Sauvignon. And probably be able to find out if they start sequencing all a bunch of other grapes, probably find clear parentage and clear lineage for a lot of these grapes. The information will be generated will accelerate the development of new disease-resistant wine grape varieties and create high-quality, flavorful grapes that are better suited for environmental changes, like warmer temperatures that are being recorded in many areas. The Cabernet Sauvignon is quite sensitive to major fluctuations, so, and especially to real cold. In California, the grape crop is varies widely and is influenced by climate, and so the warming temperatures making creating a problem. Drought, heat stress, all this is causing problems in Napa and Sonoma, but the new sequencing effort can answer some of the questions of where these grapes came from and what can be done to help make them more tolerant of these conditions. Noting the Cabernet Sauvignon grape variety is thought to date no later than the 17th century. So, but he's saying that DNA fingerprinting techniques to identify Cabernet Franc and Sauvignon Blanc, which are the parents of Cabernet Sauvignon, could be even before the 17th century. Using the genome sequencing process, they develop markers and important traits, and they're looking at do something better with the Cabernet Sauvignon without losing flavors, taste, and growing speed, all that other good stuff. All this was done in University of California. Lead author Chin Shan Chin and other researchers, and also Johns Hopkins University and all sorts of different places have been in on this study of the genome of the Cabernet Sauvignon. So, is that genetic engineering? If they change that so it's tolerant to the possibility of a drought, and if that is genetic engineering, that creates a GMO Cabernet Sauvignon, and will they have to put on the labels of the Cabernet Sauvignon bottles contains GMO grapes? And yeah, they will, because it's a national law now. They would have to do that. So, interesting things that could be coming up there with this genome, and if they start playing with it and start messing with the sequence so it is more tolerant of the weather and droughts and stuff like that. Oh well, on and on and on. We'll keep finding new things that we need to be concerned about. Okay, open up a can of wine. Popping tabs on wine are becoming more and more popular. And no corkscrews necessary. Canned wine is catching on. Andrew Jones of Field Recordings Winery And Paso Robles was one of the first winemakers to make the switch over to cans. He said he started putting wine in cans in 2013. Today, he cans about 40% of his wines. Asking why? He said it's easy. Simplicity. Wine doesn't have to be so ceremonial. He says canned wines currently make up less than 1% of the total market, but it has been exploding. Over the last year, canned wines went from 6.4 million. What? What is that? Oh, geez.
What?
Oh, a video popped on here, and not where I was looking, and all of a sudden somebody started to talk in my ear, and I'm going, huh? I thought maybe it was you doing duck talk again. I tuned in Mike, and he started talking to me like he was Donald Duck. He had a helium filter on, and so.
See, I thought it was more of the chipmunks, but that's okay.
Chipmunk, yeah. There you go. There, chipmunk is even, yeah. That's true.
Alvin.
Yeah, the chipmunk.
Yeah.
Alvin. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. but 6.4 million to 14.5 million within a year. The sales of canned wines. They're saying, Sommelier Whitney Adams says wine in a can is portable, affordable, single serving, and a hit with the millennials. It's where their heads are. Every month or so, a new canned wine comes out, and so it's here for sure. You know, I saw some at the store the other day. Single cans retail for as low as $5. Four packs and six packs are available. You don't have to buy it that day and drink it that night. You can actually, it says canned wine actually ages better than bottles because there's no light hitting the product. So it keeps it super fresh. I saw some, I didn't buy it. I need to buy a canned wine. It's, you know, it just seems really weird to be drinking wine out of a can. But, you know, hey, why not? It seems like almost every week I have something new to talk about canned wine, our different closures on wine and all that. So, but canned wine, I need to get over Irene and talk to her. Here we go. Scientific ripening of grapes. You know, we always hear the grapes need to be ripe on the vine. We just talked about the grease bricks and how it needs to be a certain level and all that other stuff needs to be done at the right levels and all that so we can have it. But for the past six seasons, Chris Henry has been honing the scientific pursuit of enhancing the maturity of wine grapes at a special workshop he's doing in Teawa Winery. That's Teawa, two words, winery. He says it's still in an experimental stage, but he sees it as a tool. He was enthusiastically received by about 20 representatives from wineries and wine companies around the region after flights through four. Let's see, where are we here? I've been reading this. New Zealand, of course. New Zealand is always doing stuff like this. It says, after 20 representatives from wineries and wine companies around the region had four flights, each of Chardonnay, Merlot, and Syrah, which had been enhanced by Mr. Henry's scientific and organically driven approach to enhancing grape maturity. The wine is taken from a Teawa vineyard, has undergone the enhancement program during the 2015-16 season, and he said it demonstrated what can be done. He said it's called alternative chemistry for growing food, and it's based on citrus orchard or Orchards, which achieved organic certification on the outskirts of Auckland. And he is now applying that to grapes. He ran into insect problems that he said he solved that with the development of two insecticidal and fungicidal products he developed. He said the use of them knocked over the insect problem. They also stopped botrytis. And so he, in 1996, he became involved in grape growing, and he worked with potassium bicarbonate and potassium through the development of a company he founded. And then he moved to Hawke's Bay in 2000 to work as a machine operator and at a winery, and which the winery was both organic and chemically controlled. Experimental crops have produced grapes with thicker skins and enhanced color, and are being able to lift maturity caught plenty of attention. The Pask Winery Managing Director and Chief Winemaker Kate Radburn says she was impressed when she first heard about it. Interesting approach, and it's something the industry needs to be innovative and look to possibilities. As a tool to help ripening, it looked encouraging. One of the aspects that caught the attention, it showed that it was possible to spread the ripening process across various sites. They said that one advantage would be that ripening could be spread to avoid what was often a bottleneck of grapes at one peak harvesting time. So chemically ripening grapes, interesting. It would be good. I mean, a lot of times grapes all come ready to pick at the same time. If you can get the sugars up and you can get it ready to be picked a little bit before another one, then that might work out very well. It could be something that could be used to enhance the process. Let's see. 20 go over to see this one. Oh, GMO. Yeah. GMOs. We're still hearing a lot about GMOs. Genetically modified organisms. It's, I don't want to hear a quote of the continue to article. Yes. Coming to a vineyard near you, GMO wine. Genetically modified organisms has been intense. The world has looked at it and everything. There's been backlashes to Monsanto and other companies out there, Monsanto being the big one that's really getting most of the backlash. A fear for GMO products, and they're saying that it may do damage to non-GMO plants if a GMO field is nearby. But much work is being done with grapevine modification and to fight disease by creating resistant strains. And it's been a success and some failures. After 100 years of playing with it, scientists still seek to develop grapevines that can withstand various obstacles like climate change. And genome sequencing could cause help to doing GMO. 20th century thing there. The first genome within a grape genus was Vitis vinifera in 2007. But it's to clarify how nitrogen fertilization affects grape berry ripening, chemical composition, and wine quality, and other things. So that's what the GMO are. That's what the sequences have done. But the British Columbia has worked with others to try to come up with plants that are breakthroughs, climate-tolerant wine grapes, and not lose flavors and taste. Sequencing technology with computer algorithms could provide more detail for all this. The GMO sequencing is, let's see, oh, don't click up to me too far. Cultivated wine grape varieties are the result of multiple vine crossings. So if you propagate through planting seeds, the grapevines may not be what you're actually looking for. And, it, you know, any type of variation. Oh, geez, there we go again. I'm hearing another person talking to me in my ear, and I don't know what it is. And my computer, I think. No, there we go. But the GMO sequencing of grapes could be good, could be bad. But it probably will end up changing the grapes. They've got a long, long way to go. A long way to go before they get to the point where they can actually sequence and make resistant a Cabernet Sauvignon or Chardonnay or any of those so I can plant them out in my vineyard and not have to worry about Pierce disease attacking them. It just, it's not going to happen, I don't think, for many, many years. But who knows? As fast as scientific things happen and as fast as stuff goes on, you know, a few years from now, while Mike and I are still here doing this program, what was that? Did my computer lock up again on me? Jeez! it did. It locked up. Oh, there we go. No, we didn't go. So, I don't know. Here's a new law that is being looked at to be passed in the Long Island, North Fork, New York area. This is a new video came out showing a limo driver trying to make a U-turn in the wine country. This is where 15 months ago a limo crashed and people were killed. So Long Island now is looking at stopping limos and buses and stuff like that from coming into the wine region. And July 2014, four young women lost their lives because a limo they hired made a blind U-turn. It was T-boned by an oncoming pickup truck. There's new traffic lights going up and more patrols and everything, but it's becoming so crowded and so busy in the Long Island wine areas, because it is really the closest to New York and easy for people to go to, that they're thinking about putting a stop to limos and tour buses and stuff like that going to the wineries. Residents also are thrilled that that could be a ban on stretch limos, because there's no safety standards and regulations or oversight. And once they leave the factory and are modified and altered, that's it. I mean, the factory puts them in there, but once they have been altered and made into stretch limos and stuff, the safety of them comes into question, as do a lot of other stuff about it. So if you want to do a limo to Long Island, you need to get it done pretty soon, because it looks like it might be something that's going to be a thing of the past before very long here. Which, you know, hey, if it continues to be causing problems and death. China is now importing more wines from Australia than they are from the United States. What? We lost that? Why? How? What? Huh? The latest report's coming out. Imports from Australian wine surged more than 50% in the year ending just this September to $474 million. Chinese wine lovers are turning to France, Chile, and Australia for their wines now. The United States is falling back. In fact, it was just about a year ago that I reported that California as was shipping a tremendous amount of wine to China, and they were all happy and thrilled and wiggly about it because of their sales. But now China is looking to other places again, France, Chile, and particularly Australia. And then one more thing here, and I'll let Mike tell you about our festival this weekend. Science shows cheese can make wine taste better. We already knew that, though, didn't we? I mean, we have the cheese with the wine and this one. New scientific study shows that eating cheese may actually increase how much someone likes the wine they are drinking. So these places that say, here, have some cheese. I read this here and I'm going, yeah, okay, that's cool. But cheese actually coats the mouth. It doesn't, you know, and this article went on to say how much it's good for it, and the frequent wine and cheese consumers evaluated four wines and using sips, and they said that after several sips, what happens is in the typical consumption, the subjects were given a list of sensations that which they used to indicate what caught their attention. And it said the wine over three consecutive sips, and after they swallowed, the wines were initially evaluated, the task repeated, but the piece of cheese in between sips, four different cheeses were sampled over different sessions with each wine. And they said that it did make a difference. But
all right. Ron is disconnected. I don't even know if we're still on. Well, that part's still on. Ron has disconnected from the show. We need to see if we can get him back on here. I don't know if you can even hear me or not. I heard that, though, so that's a promising sound. Okay. Let's see what happened to Ron. Don't see him back yet. Okay.
I'm back.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know what happened to me.
You were talking about the cheese and wine, and all of a sudden, pow, I go, oh, hello? And we were stuck.
I'm sitting there talking about it, and I said, well, I'm going to turn it back to Mike here and let him tell you about the festival this weekend. And I said, Mike? And then I went back to the the studio page here, and I was gone, and I don't know what happened. So, oh well.
Okay.
I'll let you tell about this weekend's festival then.
Okay. Yeah. You do have a festival this Saturday, November 12th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Florida State's Winery. Hold on just a second and see if this is the right one.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida State's Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida State's Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida State's Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida State's Winery. See you there. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flun.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida State's Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's right. Come out and enjoy the sounds of Constantine. I don't know if that's the same voice or not, but
yeah, sound like you're the Incredible Hulk.
Really, that one does. Now, let me boost it back up again. All right, come on out. Let's see. Molly is going to be in with doTERRA certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils and other health supplements to support optimal wellness. She has all kinds of cool stuff, and she also has a website. You can check out the website. Look for myduTERRA.com/Molly Clement. Don returns with Don's Wooden Things. And I saw his website. I don't know if you've been to that, but Don's Wooden Things.
Yeah.
He has a website and some examples. He does some fantastic scroll saw, fret work, just some amazing stuff he does with wood. It's cool.
We also have hanging up at the winery a picture that he did out of wood. It's a wine bottle with cheese and a glass and all made out of wood. Really, really cool. It's for sale, by the way, too.
Oh, wow. Nice. He also does custom work, and it's really, really cool stuff. Frank and Sharon will return with their ever expanding one of a kind natural gemstone jewelry collection. And Susie's Dogs. Susie has several things listed here. Susie's Dogs, they grill to order hamburger, cheeseburgers, veggie burgers, a whole lot of good stuff. Grilled cheese sandwiches, Philly cheese sandwiches. You got to check it out. Go to the winery hungry and thirsty for wine. Because you can combine that there.
That's right.
Also, an assortment of evening or everyday wraps or shawls. She has a Baby Oh Baby, custom designed and hand crocheted assortment of baby romper and matching bonnets for babies 1 to 2 months and 3 to 6 months. Newborn blankets and baby afghans. Let's see. Also, if that wasn't enough, she has unique stuff, an assortment of books and different things from the attic. And doggy sweaters as well. So come on out. They're custom designed and hand crocheted sweaters in 5 sizes to fit most dogs. So she's got quite a presence there. And come on out. The weather is amazing. It is just, I mean, it's great to be outside. It's just been unbelievable.
Absolutely.
And especially under the oak trees, it's a great scene and everything. Shopping is always fun, and you can enjoy great music and a glass of your favorite wine. And check it out. Go to Florida State's Winery this Saturday. That is November 12th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Holiday season's upon us, people. So,
yes.
Good time to get something unique.
Let's see. This month, the tip jar at the counter is for Raffle Rescue. Raffle Rescue's mission is to keep pets in the home so they will not be put in a shelter. Which is a great, great, great cause. It is easier to keep a pet in a home than to try to adopt it out of a shelter. So visit and put a little something extra in the Raffle Rescue jar there at Florida State's Winery. So you can come by there anytime and do that. Otherwise, we'll see you Saturday. And as always, you can bring your donation of pet food for Raffle Rescue and get a 10% discount on your wine purchase. And also vaccinated friendly leashed pets are always welcome. And, so there you go. It's great for the whole family and for your pets as well. Just, as long as we're under control, and I mean the kids, not the pets. I mean the pets, not the kids.
Are all of them.
All of them. I will, what's the next, I guess we can close the show.
Yeah, there you go. Next week is the 17th, the day before, a week before Thanksgiving. 2 weeks to Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving.
Wow, already. That's amazing. It's already time. 17th, 7 p.m. here at Blog Talk Radio, all about wine. I was trying to think of, is that today? Tomorrow is Veterans Day?
Veterans Day, Yep. Yeah. All of you veterans, thank you very much for your service.
And I also found out today is USMC Day. 1775, the Marines were founded, I believe. So many years ago. So
many years
to them as well.
Be safe on Veterans Day. Attend some of the Veterans Day parades and stuff like that. There's some really cool ones all around the country. It really. So check those
thank
out.
You to all our veterans. We will see you all next week. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great one. And see you Saturday the 12th at Florida State's Winery for Winefest. Be there.
Yep.
It's
thank you all very much for tuning in.
Yep. We'll see you all next time.
All right. Bye.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida State's Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.